The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this February 24th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us on what's turned out to be a gorgeous day here in the Auburn and Opelika area. Tons to get to on the program this afternoon. Basketball, baseball will dominate today's show, and man, we're excited to dive into so many fun topics today as we're coming down the home stretch, right, of the college basketball season, college baseball, non-con schedule really starting to heat up. Auburn baseball, of course, coming off the great weekend and looking to extend that winning streak into tomorrow and then into this weekend against Nebraska as well. So we have a lot of great conversations on those two sports this afternoon. Christian, happy Tuesday. How are you?
Man, happy Tuesday. I need to scream of excitement, but I need to save the voice because it's Lee Scott baseball season two. And man, we are fired up to head over to the academy here in just a little bit. As soon as we're off the air here, man, we got Lee Scott, the home opener, not the first game of the season, but the home opener for the Lee Scott Warriors. Man, made a big time run last year. Really, really excited about this team. Really excited to see what they can do in year two and excited to have a whole lot of baseball conversations here in hour number one.
Yep, there's a lot to get too. So one guest coming up in the second hour to start the second hour of the show at 3:05. We continue talking with members of Auburn baseball as we will have the pitching coach for Auburn baseball, Everett Tiefert, will be joining us on the phone lines. Had a chance to sit down with Christian earlier today and talk about a unit that is playing so well right now. So we'll talk about that a little bit at 2:30, and then again, Coach Tiefert will be with us at 3:05, and then we'll talk Auburn and Oklahoma because Tiger basketball is back tonight in Norman.
In case you forgot.
Yeah, in case you hadn't heard, we'll talk about that in the second hour as well. But up until we talk to Coach Tiefert, phone lines are open all of hour number one. So if you have thoughts or anything that you want to talk about today, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you on this Tuesday afternoon, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390 is the number to give us a call. Be on the air, talk to us, and tell us what you think. Or you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we do start with basketball today because I mentioned we are coming down the home stretch of the regular season of college basketball. And it's kind of crazy to think about it, right? But we have this week and next week, and that's it for the regular season. That's it. We have a week and a half left of the regular season in college basketball. You then have conference tournaments, and we are less than 3 weeks away from Selection Sunday.
Whew.
And so when you start talking bracketologies, right, they put these out once or twice over the summer. They'll do it in August. They'll do it in November and December. But you start talking about bracketology in late February, that's when it starts to have a little bit of legitimacy, and that's where we begin today's conversation, because Auburn is a coin flip. A lot of teams are a coin flip, and so many of these conferences are trying to figure out how many teams will we have in, who are our national title contenders, who are Sweet 16 contenders, and then just kind of everybody else.
Yeah, and wildly enough to think, and that while there's a couple teams in the SEC that have taken a bit of a step in front of everybody else in terms of SEC standings, in terms of their seed lines, the numbers and Joe Lunardi still absolutely love the Southeastern Conference. 11 projected teams from the SEC are projected to be playing in the NCAA tournament, and that is without the expansion that we are continuing to have to talk about outside of 2-4, because we are very much anti-expansionists. But 11 SEC teams, you have 9 Big Ten teams, 8 in the ACC and the Big 12, 3 in the Big East and the West Coast, and then 2 in the Mountain West. And so Southeastern Conference still dominating in how many teams are expected to get in. That being said, this doesn't necessarily compare to last year where you had 4, 5, 6 teams competing for the number one overall seed, or just one seeds or possible two seeds. They're right around staggered. You see Florida right in there at the top. Alabama's towards the top in there as well. You have multiple 8, 9, 10s, and 11s in there as well for the Southeastern Conference. And so exactly as we predicted, just the maybe a couple of teams that begin to leverage their way out in front of everybody, and then just a conglomerate right in the middle. And I don't really know how to feel.
I'm starting to understand how Big Ten fans and Big 12 fans and ACC fans feel when we talk football about the SEC bias and the SEC love that they get, that this conference receives, right? Because a lot of, and I have a lot of friends that cover other teams outside of the Southeastern Conference, so I do get the perspectives from them and their portrayal of the SEC, right? Because the Southeastern Conference, no matter what sport it is, always says, well, yeah, we play the toughest teams, we play the toughest schedule because we play in the SEC, right?
Yeah.
But folks on the outside say, yeah, you're self-proclaiming you're the best, you're also getting the love from those who cover it, and so you are the best because you say you're the best, and because you beat teams in your conference, you claim that you're the best no matter what. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting when it comes to bracketology. Do we really think that 11 teams out of this conference this year deserve to be playing in the NCAA tournament? Do we really think that all those teams deserve a shot at the tournament? I get why. Right, you're playing top 25 teams, you're playing quad one games, and some of these teams had tough non-conference schedules, others did not. But I'm starting to see, at least in the basketball conversation right now, 11 teams do not belong in the NCAA tournament from the SEC.
This year, even more than last year, will show that number, and I think this is even more of a test trial than last year was, because you don't have those dominant SEC teams. That being said, what if all of a sudden Missouri, who's a play-in game with Santa Clara right now, wins that game? They would then match up with Louisville. I don't hate that matchup for Missouri. What if Missouri all of a sudden makes it to the Sweet 16 in the second weekend as one of those play-in games, and all of a sudden of the 11 teams, there's 5 or there's 6 of them that make it into the round of 32, if not even the Sweet 16, that is when some of those legitimate arguments are going to come through of, okay, maybe the eye test does show a little bit more than the numbers do. That way, the teams that are towards the bottom of the SEC that are still projected here on this website from Joe Lunardi, okay, maybe these quad one losses don't need to be gifted with as much oomph towards their resume than we think.
Exactly. And that's my one big knock on the NCAA tournament. You talked about anti-expansion a moment ago. That's one of my big knocks on the NCAA basketball tournament. As much fun as it is, losses just don't hurt you as much in college basketball. And the more teams that make a postseason, right, we talk about this in college football, the more teams you add to the postseason, the more teams that qualify, the wider your range of mistakes is. Your what's the term I'm looking for? Your not grace period, but your room for error is larger. I don't like that.
Meaning with more and more teams into the tournament.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because if right now we're at 68, they're talking about 84, 110. Like, I don't like that in sports. The games should matter. Losing a game should matter. You should be punished for losing a game. Now, I understand the difference in college football where you play 12 to 14 games versus college basketball where you play 40 to 50, right? There is a difference, and the more games you play, the more grace period you get. That's also, right, the more room for error you get. There's a difference in high school football where you play 10 games in a regular season versus Major League Baseball where you play 182, right? You have room for error, and it's large 162, isn't it? Yeah, 162. I knew it didn't sound right when I said it.
82 NBA games.
Yeah. But that's my point, is the NCAA tournament waters down the season. And a team that's got double-digit losses, and let's be real, and let's be honest, Auburn's in this category, right? Does that team deserve to be in the tournament? Why does that team deserve a shot to win a national championship? That's what the NCAA tournament brings, and that's been my gripe for years about the tournament in itself. It's the worst way to crown a true champion. The worst way to crown a true champion. And so that's where the SEC gets so much love. It's like, well, yeah, we're 8-6 in the conference, but we just play in a really tough conference.
But we're 19th in KenPom because of our losses, their quality, and against really other really good teams.
But you're 500 in your own conference, or under 500 if you're Auburn. And that's where non-conference play comes in to help you kind of balance that out. But I don't know. That's just kind of my gripe on all of that is losing a game should matter, and it just feels like it doesn't as much as it used to in college basketball.
Book it here. Jacob hates fun. Jacob doesn't like participation trophy. No, I don't either. And funny you say that the non-conference schedule is supposed to weigh all that out. You've gotten to the point because everybody feeds into the numbers and the systems. College basketball is almost turning into baseball, where you're looking at every single number that is physically possible, and you're looking at Auburn's on-base percentage against other pitchers and stuff like that, because the non-conference used to be a little bit of a test to see where you're at. Now, teams just stack up as many tough competition games as they can because it doesn't matter if you lose them. You're not going to get punished. If anything, your strength of schedule and your overall KenPom numbers are going to rise because, say, you do beat one of those teams. Then all of a sudden, imagine if Auburn beats Houston, right? Imagine what all of a sudden, maybe not their strength of schedule, but also or almost the, what's the official number that we like to use? We compare it to baseball all the time.
Wins. Not you're talking about war in baseball, but
no. Okay, so here we go. Instead of just the net rating, it's the net strength
adjusted
of
schedule or strength of schedule,
which
whatever
is the teams that you beat and the teams then that they go and beat. Mm-hmm. If Auburn beats Houston, Auburn's net adjusted strength of schedule is out the roof because of the teams that Houston has then beaten. But because you lost the game, darn. You just add another tally in the quad one series or the quad one category. And you don't get punished. And we're using Auburn in this category, and it sounds harsher than it may seem, but that's what people can relate to. This is what all of college basketball teams are doing, to where if you get any sort of expansion, not only does that water down the entire tournament, it makes every single win less valuable. It makes every single trip less valuable. And you feel like it makes it to where there's even more chances that the correct teams that have been the best throughout the regular season don't get the legitimate shot for the title.
This all stems from, again, bracketology today from Joe Lunardi on ESPN. He has 11 teams making it from the SEC. 11 from our conference, 9 from the Big Ten, 8 from the ACC. That's a joke. 8 from the Big 12, 3 from the Big East, 3 from the West Coast, 2 from the Mountain West, and then, of course, all the mid-majors will get their automatic bids. How do you feel about Auburn right now? Tigers hanging on, clinging desperately to a 10 seed right now in the NCAA tournament. They are considered one of the last four byes. And what that means is you're one of the last teams to not be included in the play-in games in the first four on that Tuesday, Wednesday in my hometown of Dayton, Ohio at UD Arena. Auburn is two teams away from having to play in Dayton in their first game of the NCAA tournament.
And going to show you why there's so many SEC teams, there's three of those eight teams of the last four byes and the last four in. Texas, Auburn, and Missouri are all listed in that category, and right now Missouri is one of those play-in games. If only there was a way for Auburn to get back on the right track in terms of momentum and stacking wins against quad one opponents.
Yeah, it's almost like tonight good start to do that, huh?
Surprise. Oklahoma's a quad one game for the Auburn Tigers.
But yet, Auburn is a quad two game for Oklahoma because it's on their home floor.
And wildly enough, Oklahoma would get more praise for losing a close game than Auburn would for going on the road to win this game.
I don't know. With it being quad two for Oklahoma, I don't think they get any love for losing it.
Not from the tournament committee, but from the national public.
Yeah,
especially I guess if Oklahoma goes and wins.
Yeah, yeah.
If Oklahoma wins and it is just, oh, it's quad two, it's little Auburn who struggled all year.
Mm-hmm.
Look at their record. But then you go and see that if Auburn loses to Oklahoma, it's holy cow. Nobody cares that it was a quad one game. Auburn sure hopes that it would stay a quad one game from the argument that we are not necessarily in favor of that we're having right now. But nobody goes out to praise Auburn for winning at Oklahoma, despite it being in their category of the top 75 teams. Oklahoma, the 71st ranked team in KenPom right now.
Yeah.
Or
so,
the net ranking.
Yeah. Wild stuff. These are going to change, okay? A lot of these teams and matchups and seedings will change between now and Selection Sunday. Of course, we have conference tournaments, but the committee has told us that they don't matter. I wish a team would finally stand up and say, I don't want to go to Nashville. We're good. If there's a team, and we'll have the conversation, as we have every year.
I was going to say, last year,
we get to it.
Last year,
Auburn was in that category. There were several teams, but look at a team just for you know, conversation sake for just a moment. Who's a team in the SEC right now that if nothing changes, they're happy with their seed line? Who is it?
Probably Florida, but look at any of these one seeds that are in different conferences. If you want to throw the spin on to Auburn from last year, if you're Duke, what do you benefit by going and playing in the ACC tournament? You're the number one overall seed right now.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything from it. And I'm even talking about a team because here's what sucks is we have seen it to where teams do not get praised or benefited or bonused by winning games in your conference tournament.
Yeah.
Teams have absolutely been punished for losing games in your conference tournament.
To the point where Duke, as the number one overall seed right now following this weekend's win over Michigan, could go 2-1 or 3-1 in the ACC tournament and would drop if they were to lose the ACC championship than if they didn't play it at all.
And I look at a team, again, like Vandy right now.
Yeah,
if nothing changes,
seed,
they're a five seed with Belmont, Virginia, and Stephen F. Austin. You're telling me that if Vanderbilt didn't say, if this ended right now and Nashville started next week, SEC tournament started next week, you're telling me Vanderbilt behind closed doors wouldn't say, we're good. We'll stay.
I think
we'll take our seed.
I think even if you didn't look at the other teams, Vanderbilt, you're a five seed right now. You could drop. You could test the risk of trying to jump up to a four.
If you win the whole tournament.
If you win the whole thing, but if you don't play in it, you're a five right now. Are you taking it?
Yeah. It's like
deal or no deal, yeah. but the banker is actually giving you a crazy better offer than what the risk would possibly be.
To stay. Yeah. It's just wild, man. It really is. And somebody's going to do it. A team will eventually do it. Heck, a conference may do it eventually.
Texas
a conference
team
may get screwed over by a team or two missing out on the tournament and saying we're enough. Problem is, tournaments generate some revenue, and the conferences like that revenue.
That does
the problem.
It would take somebody like a UConn or an Arizona to fall and Houston to take their spot as a one seed. Because I'm guessing Houston right now has got to be, they're the top two seed.
What would cause more chaos? That happening, a one seed dropping to a two seed or a two dropping to a three because they lost earlier in their conference tournament, or a team who on the bubble or like an Auburn in the 10 seed loses one and done in Nashville and misses the tournament altogether? Which would cause more chaos?
Cow. From the overall standpoint, it would be the team that misses the tournament overall. But, I mean, there would be a lot of fire if a one seed who was arguably one of the top teams all year long, like UConn has been, if they fall, because they've played a lot of really close games, if they slip up in the Big East semifinals or the championship.
Or even, I'm saying, even go one and done. Which I guess they would have a double bye. And I can't remember how the Big East tournament works.
Yeah.
To your point. You see what I'm saying?
But like, regardless, yeah. Basically,
a bad showing.
Of a team that's on the bubble, even more than Auburn. So, say a Missouri, right, as a play-in game right now, as the 11 seed, they lose on Thursday. And, well, heck, right now I think Missouri's still scheduled for at least to not play on Thursday. But if they get to that point,
mm-hmm.
All right, Missouri, you can play in this and risk going up, or you can play in it. And you know the committee doesn't reward you. You might lose it. You might not make the tournament at all. What is your choice?
Especially with other teams in the conference around you on the bubble that can go on runs too. That's what
to happen. This is the same type of conversation that we had with a four-team playoff of how long until there's a fifth team that deserves it.
But this should not be a conversation. This should not be something that a head coach or an athletic director has to contemplate in the back of their mind as we're coming down the home stretch. The clarity should be there.
And what also should be there is not the comfort of expansion to where even if you play in it, you're still going to make the tournament. That is not the end-all, be-all. Here's what solves all issues.
Sadly, I think most teams and athletic departments would disagree with you. I think they would disagree.
I agree.
They don't want it to be harder. They want it to be easier because they want their team to be in it. That's why you're seeing the college football playoff about to expand, because more teams and more athletic directors want their teams involved so they can make more money.
Yeah. We made the playoff.
Yeah, you can add the year to the wall inside the football facility.
Right.
But that's not good for the sport. But guess what? And I heard somebody say this, and I don't know who did, and I know we got to get to break. An athletic director's job is to not make the product better across the sport. The athletic director's job at any given school is his job is not to benefit the conference that they're in or to make the product better on the field. Their job is to put their teams and their programs in the best situations to win. And expansion is good for all major teams.
I was going to say, that's the pressure that you deal with, because even if you don't necessarily agree with it, if it means, if all of a sudden the college football playoff goes from 12 to 16 or 16 to 24, that means a team like Auburn can then make the playoff for the first time? How is a guy like John Cohen supposed to say no?
Exactly. So, a lot of great conversations here. We've gone way past our first break. We'll get to that now. Come back, talk more basketball, flip to baseball as well, here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, talking more college basketball. And we bring it back home after a deep dive into bracketology and why we are displeasant and displeasured and dishappy. I don't know.
Maybe we're the negative Nancy's. Maybe we're the problem.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Apologies.
Sorry we want the best for the sport. Sorry we want competition. Sorry that we want the product to actually be good and not
reflective.
Hand out participation trophies because you have a big name and a big logo. So,
congrats, you won 13 games this year. Welcome to the tournament.
Yeah. I think that's stupid, but that's the direction we're going, because it's not about who wins and loses. It's about making
fun.
Money.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. In case you forgot, cha-ching, sports are about the money. Not about who wins, not about who loses, not about the champions, not about the athletes, not about the coaches, not about the schools, and definitely not about you, the fans.
What?
It's about making money. So,
anyway,
we'll get off that rant for a while. Auburn has four games left, Christian.
Yeah.
Including tonight, Auburn basketball, on the road at Oklahoma. And we'll do a deep dive later in the show, in the second hour, about Auburn and Oklahoma and a couple of guys that Auburn better be ready to defend tonight. But Auburn's got four games left. At Oklahoma, home for Ole Miss, home for LSU, and on the road at Alabama. We just talked about Auburn being a 10 seed, and they're two teams away from being a play-in game. They're a bad loss away from being out of the tournament altogether.
Yeah.
What do they need to do down the stretch in your mind, even with the win against Kentucky? Because, my goodness, we could talk about for another hour on what this would be like if Auburn had lost on Saturday.
Right.
But they didn't. They won. Well,
but bracketology shows you right there that Auburn didn't move. So.
Yeah, which is crazy. But
you didn't necessarily get rewarded for it just because of the losing streak. If anything, you got rewarded by not continuing to slide.
Yeah, you didn't get further punished.
Right.
Yeah. Which, so what does Auburn need to do in your mind? Last four games.
If you survive. Sure. I mean, if you're 4-0, there's no doubt you're making the tournament. You probably jump up to a 9 or possibly jump up to an 8 based off of how good that win against Alabama would look. And you then corrected your wrongs and shows that you are then playing really good basketball once again. 3-1, regardless of how it comes, because I feel like there are different ways that 3-1 could be perceived. If it's 3-1 with a loss at Alabama, I think you, despite the name and the location, I think you would take that with a little bit more of a grain of salt just because of the way that Alabama is playing right now. But if that one loss comes before Alabama, then you need to beat Alabama. I think that is what needs to be said. I think that needs to, especially, I guess this is a little bit easier of a conversation based off of what happens tonight, just because this one is one that you don't think about, but can still heavily be rewarded in favor of Auburn because it is a quad one win or a quad one game. It could be a quad one win, but I think you have to win the next three. I think that is the easiest way to go about it. I say easy with quotation marks because it's the SEC. But your next three games starting tonight are against the bottom three teams in the league. The bottom three teams in the SEC. You get two of them at home. If you go 3-0, if you're Auburn, all of a sudden you go from 5-8 to 9-8 in the SEC. It's a big jump. What?
If you're 5-8 and you win the next three, you'd be 8-8.
Apologies. Sorry. No. Going back with Kentucky.
With
the win streak. Sorry. You were 5-8. You're 6-8. You go on this win streak.
Okay.
Winning the next three. Yeah. Math. Kind of math. Journalism majors.
I got you now.
That would then put you at 9-8. You are 9-9 at worst, which we talked about is good enough to make the tournament in the preseason. You have a chance to go 10-8 with a win in Alabama. That puts you in a pretty decent spot.
When you build it in perspective, you're playing the three worst teams in the league in a row with two of them on your home floor. I don't care what the season has been up to this point.
Lose those.
You can't lose them, man. If you want to be respected and make the tournament, win these games. A team that is winning games is Auburn baseball. We talk about them and what happened in Arlington next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And phone lines are open if you want to be a part of today's show. You certainly can be. We encourage you to do so by giving us a call, 334-321-1390. The number again, 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box if you would like to, 334-784-1067. And we take a step away from basketball because Tuesdays have become baseball for us. And the season is underway, of course, high school and college as well. And we mentioned it yesterday briefly, what Auburn baseball did in Arlington, but we wanted to dive deeper into that, and we'll follow that up to start hour number two with a weekly interview with a member of Auburn baseball. Started with Butch Thompson, had Jake Marciano last week, and now we have Everett Tieford, the pitching coach for Auburn baseball, who will be joining us at 3:05, so be sure you stick around for that coming up in just a little bit. But, Christian, coming off of the opening weekend win, Tigers felt good. Not great, but felt good. Pitching was phenomenal. Offense opened up after the doubleheader on Saturday. And then you got wiped against Cincinnati. 8-0, chilly night at Plainsman Park on Tuesday. And it was like, man, that was not pretty. And so Auburn gets on a plane and they head to one of their favorite stadiums in the country, Globe Life Field in Arlington, where they take on three P4 programs, two of them ranked in the top 25, and just absolutely handle business.
And two of those teams are having full expectations to host a regional, which I think is very, very impressive. We'll break this down game by game. And just, I mean, you started with 4-1 taking on 4-1, Auburn taking on Kansas State, the road team, on Friday evening. And it was just a, okay, let's find a way to bounce back. Let's see what we got. And let's hope that the offense will follow suit to what the pitching staff has done so far. It helped because Auburn scored in the top half of the first inning. And what we have figured out is sometimes that might be all Marciano needs, is one run. Obviously, you would like a little bit more than that. And he talked about that, but he talked about when we were able to talk to him last week about the mentality that he has of just continuing to do his job and knowing that the dam is going to break eventually. Didn't really get much help in his first start. Did get two runs, got one from Auburn in the first, one from Auburn in the fifth. And then finally, the floodgates began to open up. Auburn scored two in the home half of the eighth inning. Kansas State then responded with one. And one thing that you will hear me talk about all season long on the diamond is response innings and shutdown innings. Auburn didn't get a shutdown inning after scoring two in the top half of the eighth after giving up one, but they responded and got one of them right back in the ninth inning, to where Kansas State got to the point of, okay, it's 4-1. Let's find a way. Put a run on the board, work our way into the ninth. Mm-hmm. Three-run game, a little more than a bloop and a blast, but it makes it to where you can start a little bit of a rally. Going from 3-4 is huge for this Auburn team. You score one in the top half of the ninth. Auburn wins it 5-1. Kansas State, one run on four hits. Auburn, 5-on-11. But my goodness, again, the storyline of that game was, once again, Jake Marciano gets his first true win of the season, because he got the no decision his first start. Because six innings, only gives up two hits, eight strikeouts, and a whole lot of zeros on earned runs, walks, and hit batters. What more can you ask for?
Not much. I mean, that is what you're looking for. And it hasn't just been Marciano that the starting rotation has been so good. Even when they're not, they're still delivering what you need them to do. And obviously talking here, the Saturday game against Florida State with Jackson Sanders.
Yeah, and I got to talk with Coach Tiefert about that a lot, diving into Sanders' mentality, his maturity, and what they talked about in the dugout following that first inning. And again, Coach Tiefert was an incredible interview, has been an incredible interview. So I highly advise everybody sticking around to make sure you listen to that. Used a lot of football analogies in there as well. So anybody that's not crazy big on the baseball analytical side, he compares it to football in a lot of different ways, which makes it really, really interesting. Finalizing again the Kansas State game just before we go into the Florida State game. Bristol Carter got the start at the leadoff spot. And my goodness, after this weekend, it's going to be hard for anybody to take it back from him, as he wins a couple of awards in this overall weekend. Goes 1-for-3 with an RBI, two walks in there as well. Scored three runs from that leadoff spot. Guevara goes 2-for-4 with an RBI. Chase Frelick 1-for-4 with an RBI. Lucas Steele drives in another run. And Bigaman has showed up as well. He went 2-for-3 with a walk in game one, where the offense began to open up just a little bit. Against really quality opponents, you found ways to scratch at least one across in three innings. You had a crooked number inning once in the top half of the eighth inning. You then work your way to Saturday, where you get punched in the mouth in the top of the first inning. You give up a four spots before you can really even blink, before we could get the game on our TV, because we struggled for a few minutes trying to get it there. But before we could even get it on there, Florida State pounces for four, and Auburn had to find a way to respond.
And boy, did they ever. I mean, that is one of the better pitching responses I have seen from a guy this early in the season in a long time. Because if you're Jackson Sanders, second start of the year, Florida State, big name, big logo, big bats in that lineup as well, how easy would that have been to get knocked around for four and just
fold.
Yeah.
Crumble and just be like, all right, well, today's not my day. If they get three innings out of me, so be it. We've already lost. Like that, it's so easy to do that, right? Mentally as an athlete, whether it's in baseball or golf after a bad shot or, you know, whatever the case may be, a drop in football, right? It's so easy to do that, but it's so difficult to completely forget about that inning altogether. And if you did turn on the radio broadcast, TV broadcast, whatever, if you turned it on in the second inning and watched and listened from then on out, you wouldn't have ever known.
No.
You would have had no idea that Florida State had the lead the way that they did. And here's that Auburn offense. One in the second. One in the third. Crooked inning in the fifth, something we'll get to in a moment. One in the sixth. One in the seventh. One in the eighth. The most annoying, frustrating team any opponent will see all year long. Florida State got one run after that first inning crooked number. Auburn wins 8-5, 8 runs, 11 hits. And Auburn was the better baseball team in this one. You just got in a hole early, but Auburn never panicked.
Jackson Sanders gave up 4 runs on 4 hits in the first inning. And Coach Tiefert talks about it here in a little bit of how they were a pitch away from only giving up one run. Instead, it ended up snowballing a little bit. And looking back at it now, obviously easier said than done, but he says he's glad that it happened because it was able to be a teaching moment for his entire team of, okay, look at what happens when you lose focus for just one pitch, right? We talk about how many times teams are going to make you pay if you give them 4 outs in an inning, much less 2-out walks that come around and score more times than not.
Leadoff walks.
Yes, and Tiefert talks about that as well. Again, I love the baseball mind of being able to go into a pitching coach, but then also asking him offensive questions because he understands the flip side of things and how much that hurts his staff, and so how much he loves seeing Auburn's team being able to do that. Jackson Sanders, after giving up 4 runs on 4 hits in the top half of the first inning, goes 5 innings, gets the win, and steals 4 more innings on the mound for this Auburn team. Because you mentioned it, how easy could it have been to tuck the tail, go back out onto the mound, chip away, but be very, very lazy in throwing strikes, not attacking the zone, all of a sudden getting 3-1, 2-0 on a couple of batters, all of a sudden there's a single, all of a sudden there's a walk, and now your bullpen's getting warm.
Mm-hmm.
So much credit goes to Jackson Sanders, so much credit goes to Coach Everett Tiefert and Coach Butch Thompson for allowing Sanders to go back out and work through things. And Coach Tiefert talks about it, and it's such a funny thing in baseball of how many starters just need the first inning. If you can get out of the first inning, things really, really, really begin to settle down. They've said that Sanders is one of those guys. He walked into the dugout, and the first thing he said was, "Coach, they're not letting a fastball go by." And you know what they did? Slider.
Quit throwing fastballs.
Slider. Yeah. Slider.
Yeah.
Slider. There were times he threw 7-8 in a row to the same batter, and it was just 0-1, 0-2, foul ball, foul ball, foul ball, ball 1, strike 3. Mm-hmm. And it's so impressive to see. Ends up with 9 strikeouts. There was a time I believe he struck out 5, if not 6 in a row. Absolutely shut down the Florida State offense, which gives your offense then a little bit of a boost and gives them time, like what we've talked about. This team's not going to go and hit 100 jacks this year, but my goodness, how many times are they going to have runners on the corners? How many times are they going to have a runner on second base with 1 out? How many times are they going to have runners on first and second with nobody out? I do it in just about every single inning, and you're seeing the benefits from it. You mentioned it. 1 in the second, 1 in the third. All of a sudden, you're through 3, and it's okay. We've cut the lead in half. Do we like the 4-2 deficit? No, but you can see that MO was starting to work its way back over into Auburn's dugout. 0s in the fourth, 0 in the fifth for Florida State, and 3 for Auburn in the home half of the fifth inning, 1 in the sixth, 1 in the seventh, and teams tie runs in the eighth. But you saw this Auburn team scratch runs across in ways that you don't see in traditional baseball, which is so rewarding for me. We saw Bub and Brandon McCrane twice on a first to third, Bub purposely gets picked off or gets caught in a rundown, McCrane goes down and scores. That's two runs that you stole from a really, really good Florida State team. And my goodness, you mentioned it, just a pesky, annoying little brother type of team that will not go away.
Yeah, and so early in this season, the best win for Auburn, I think, by far, in again, a very, very early season. And then Louisville on Sunday, and this wasn't Sunday afternoon, this wasn't Sunday night. No, this was Sunday morning, 10:30 in Arlington, and Auburn did what they do, just kind of in reverse order, rather than getting down in a hole and then going run here, run here, run here. They just started from the jump, man. Run in the second, run in the third, run in the fourth, run in the fifth. Big crooked inning in the seventh with five and another run in the eighth. Yes, you gave up three in the ninth and made it a little dicey, but you still win by four. You win 10-6. How about this? 10 runs, 13 hits in the ball game. On top of what you're getting on the mound right now from this Auburn team, as Alex Petrovic has continued to show he is good enough to be in your rotation. You feel good with him. Went five total innings, gave up six hits and three earned runs, but had five Ks as well. Did not give up a walk, as this Auburn starting pitching staff has continued to not do, right? They continue to not give free bases. You're the same way I am. I'd much rather you put it in play. Let your defense get after it. I'd rather a single than a walk, especially early in the innings, too. And this starting rotation for Auburn just simply, at least to this point in the season, does not walk batters.
Yeah. Apologies, have my notes mixed up. It was the Louisville game that Bub and Brandon McCrane scored two on the first to thirds. Right into your point of hard-hit balls rather than walks. That's what Florida State forced Auburn to do in that Saturday game, where Auburn had three or four ground outs that were hit 108 or above. And then finally you saw a couple of those bloops fall with Guevara, with Frelick and things like that. But so had my notes mixed up on that side of things. But I mean, you're right. We unofficially counted. I guess we could officially count. But I think we counted yesterday that Auburn scored in 16 of the 27 innings that you played in Arlington, and only three of those were crooked number innings. Yet you put up 5, 8, and 10 in the contests. That's absurd.
Yeah, that's wild.
Because with most teams in college baseball, okay, you score 10 runs, cool. Where did the 7th spot come from? Oh, it came in the home half of the third? Cool. Didn't happen for Auburn.
Right. You had a 3-1. You had a 3-piece. You had a 5-piece.
Scored two in the top of the 8th against Kansas State.
Yeah.
Those are your three crooked run innings where Auburn was just one hit away from doubling that in a lot of these innings, yet you were still able to scratch home just one in a couple of these innings that still mentally feel like wins for maybe the pitching staff and the team playing defense, because it could have been three, but it was only one. You do that in three innings, that's three runs that you steal on the scoreboard.
And so now Auburn takes that momentum into Plainsman Park tomorrow. They've got West Georgia coming in. A 9-game homestand is what Auburn has right now. 9 games in a row that Auburn will be playing between tomorrow against West Georgia, this weekend 3-game set against Nebraska, Samford in the midweek, Winthrop coming to town, and then UAB coming into Plainsman Park. Here's what's crazy. Auburn is at home the rest of non-con play. How weird is that?
Yeah.
Auburn's at home for the rest of non-con play for baseball before they head to Columbia, Missouri on Friday, March 13th to open up conference play.
How wild is it, too, that March 13th is conference play?
Opening weekend of baseball, college baseball, and SEC play is the same weekend as Selection Sunday for college basketball. It always falls on the calendar right around then, but just putting that in perspective for those who maybe haven't made the connection yet on the calendar, that's the timeline we're talking about here. Remember how we were talking in the start of the show about how little time we have between now and the end of the regular season for basketball? It's that same timeline for non-con play in baseball, to where you get into conference play and all bets are off.
And Auburn's doing it against really, really quality opponents, too. You mentioned Nebraska, Samford, who's going to be a really good team this year, and Winthrop, who's trying to compete in there as well. I mean, this is no easy task, but should be very, very exciting. But you mentioned it all starts with West Georgia. Hump day Loretta the Camel making her way back to Plainsman Park.
Yep, that's tomorrow at 6. Radio broadcast will be over on Wings 94.3 here locally. I will not be able to make it to that game or the Nebraska series this weekend, but very excited to hear and see how those games go for Auburn baseball, who, again, are playing very well and coming off that series in Arlington. So that is tomorrow, but we got stuff going on today. We got stuff going on tomorrow too. We'll plug all that and tell you what you need to know as we wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrap it up, hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we get to hour number two. Reminder, Everett Tiefert, the pitching coach for Auburn baseball, will be joining us. We'll have him on a conversation Christian was able to have this morning talking Auburn baseball. So we'll get you started in hour number two with that. Then we'll take a deep dive into Auburn basketball versus Oklahoma. So all that coming up in the second hour. But want to plug some high school stuff here quickly. Christian, you've got baseball. Jack Hutton has softball. I have basketball tomorrow morning. We'll plug it at the end of the show too, but give you a chance to just kind of get all that out here at the end of the first hour. But I got to shout this out. This is the wildest stat I have ever seen. So state basketball tournaments are going on right now. Regional tournaments for high school right here in the state.
No, it's baseball season. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm not far behind you. So Mobile Christian has a girl on their team. 3A Mobile Christian in the South Regional. Hadley Kelly is her name. She set a girls' state record today as they were playing Thomasville in the Elite Eight in the regional final. She broke the state record for blocks in a game for girls basketball in the state of Alabama. Would you like to guess the number of blocks she had in four-quarter 32-minute basketball game? It was a two-point game, so no running clock either. This was legit full four quarters.
26.
It's pretty close. The 6'1 junior, Hadley Kelly, for Mobile Christian, set a state record this morning with 23 blocked shots in a game. That's insane. 23 blocked shots in a game, brother. That's crazy. 23. She averaged almost 6 blocks a quarter. She was averaging a block like every 80 seconds.
I would love to know, or to go back and see this game, to see if they were all on one possession. Not all one, but like if you were getting 4 or 5 on one, like just block,
put back,
offensive
block,
rebound.
Put back, block, rebound. Yeah.
Or if it was just,
I don't know,
swatted out of bounds, inbounds, pass down low, swat it out to the three-point line. We work our offense. We come back. They try and test you again.
God, she also had 14 points and 13 rebounds. Golly.
Holy cow.
She had also, literally, triple-double with blocks. That's insane. That 23 number, and this is from the AHSAA, says it was too shy of the national record for high school girls basketball. That's wild. That's insane. So shout out to her. That was pretty cool. We're going to plug some stuff at the end of hour two as well, at the end of the show. But we've got high school stuff going on. Speaking of high school basketball, I've got Auburn High girls basketball coming up tomorrow morning in Montgomery at the ACA Dome. It's Auburn High and Central Phoenix City again in the Elite Eight. Winner moves on to the Final Four. So that'll be tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. over on 96.3 W. Lee.
The good news is that history doesn't repeat itself.
No. We weren't in this exact same position last year. Didn't go 3-0 against the Red Devils and have to win the fourth one, the one that matters most, and come up short? Nope.
No, not at all.
Nope.
Well, for me, we don't believe in basketball. February, we actually just purposely, it was baseball season, so we willingly just...
That was nice. That was
nice. We willingly allowed me to not have to call both. And so, Lee Scott Warrior Baseball, the home opener, starts here this afternoon, taking on Marlboro. We're running over there as soon as we get off of here. It's a 4:30 first pitch on Tiger Country 104.5.
Yep, we'll tell you more about it at the end of the show. Hour number one is in the books. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We'll talk Auburn basketball against Oklahoma. And we start the hour with Auburn baseball's pitching coach, Everett Tiefert. He joins us coming up next to start hour number two.
On the Line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us here on this Tuesday afternoon. If you missed the first 60 minutes of today's show, I'm sorry, but that's okay. You could catch up with it anytime you'd like, wherever you get your podcast, or check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Some basketball talk in there, some baseball talk in there as well, and that's where we go to start hour number two, because Auburn baseball, they bounced back in a big way from that loss against Cincinnati last Tuesday night inside of Plainsman Park. A three-game sweep in Arlington against three P4 opponents, Kansas State, Florida State, and Louisville. And they get ready for a midweek tomorrow and then a big series this weekend at home against Nebraska. So excited for what that is going to be. But again, a lot of that in hour number one. We continue that here in hour number two, where we have a chance to sit down with a member of Auburn baseball once a week. We started with Butch Thompson, talked to Jake Marciano last week, and our first assistant coach of the year is the guy who's coaching the hottest position on the team right now. Here's Christian sitting down and talking with Coach Tieford of Auburn baseball, the pitching coach for the Tigers.
Just underway here in hour number two of the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and we get to have one of our favorite segments of the week and one that is quickly becoming a crowd favorite as well. And if you've been paying any attention to Auburn baseball early this season, one thing has been impossible to miss. The Tigers have set the tone on the mound. So to help us break down what's been working, how the staff was built, and what growth looks like as the season moves forward, we are joined by Auburn baseball's very own Coach Everett Tiefer, the pitching coach for the Auburn Tigers. Coach, we appreciate your time. It's great to have you with us. And man, it's finally feeling like early baseball weather here on the Plains.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Coming from a dome, today's a little colder, but it should be a nice weekend coming up for us.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised that you guys even decided to come back to the Plains. I mean, with the success that you have in Arlington, if you need to go take some of the dirt from Globe Life, put it on Plainsman Park, I mean, whatever was working, keep it with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, the last 2 years, that's been a good trip for us. And I think it's built confidence in our guys and shown that we can play with some really good teams out there. So hopefully this year is no different than it was last year.
Well, Coach, Auburn is 6-1 to start the season. And again, a lot of that success has come from the guys on the mound. When you're looking at this pitching staff right now, I guess generically, before we dive into a couple of the players, what really stands out to you early on?
They're doing a really good job throwing their off-speed pitches for strikes behind and counts. You know, we haven't been perfect in getting ahead. Nobody is, but they've been able to really neutralize some guys by being able to land breaking balls when they do fall behind. And I think fastball command's been really big for a couple of them, being able to pitch inside. So it's not necessarily anything that's uber sexy, I guess, but, you know, if you can throw stuff that you know, not a fastball and a fastball count for a strike, that'll really keep guys off balance, and I feel like we've done a great job of that.
Hey, strike one is pretty sexy regardless of how it looks, whether it's a swing and miss or whether it's right over the heart of the plates. Take us back to before the season and the transfer portal process. When you and Coach Thompson are evaluating these arms that you want to bring to the Plains, what are some of the biggest things that you're looking for beyond just raw velocity or stuff?
Yeah, I think we're looking for some sort of unique trait carrying tool. You know, Jake Marciano throws a lot of strikes, and it's a low release with some good ride to his fastball that makes it play above his velocity. You know, Drew Whalen's a five-pitch guy, really probably six-pitch mix guy. Garrett Brewer, kind of same thing, a unique fastball look. So I think we're trying to find one, you know, maybe two, if we can, carrying tools that the guy has or something that's just a little bit different that hitters aren't used to. You know, the guys who throw really hard can be super expensive, and we're trying to find some margins and some values in some other ways. And so far, it feels like we've done an all right job of doing that.
Auburn baseball pitching coach Everett Tiefert here with us on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. You mentioned a guy like Jake Marciano who's really set the tone, has worked his way into that ace spot so far this season. When a guy is throwing the ball the way that he is early on in the season, what does that do for the rest of your staff, whether that's in preparation or just an overall confidence when he takes the mound?
Yeah, I mean, he's so cool, calm, and collected that I think it really permeates through the entire team, really. Just because you feel like, man, this game's going to be in good hands. We're going to get to our top relievers on a Friday night and get a win. You know, he's been able to, like I said, land a lot of off-speed pitches throughout entire counts. He's done an unbelievable job throwing fastballs inside to right-handed batters because he gives a funky look to lefties.
Yeah.
So he's got some platoon advantage there, but righties, he's really executing at a high level. And it's fun to watch. It's almost like a video game a little bit, getting to watch him work and, you know, just do things at a really high level for a kid his age.
You mentioned being able to throw the off speed for strikes, especially in fastball counts. Jackson Sanders took a really tough first inning against Florida State in game two in Arlington, but came back out, absolutely shoved, and leaned on that slider, as you mentioned, as the get ahead pitch, as well as that strikeout pitch, and ultimately stole four more innings for your guys. What did you see from his composure on the mound in game two?
I mean, that was just awesome. You know, it's kind of a little bit like football. You want to stay ahead of the chains, and if your starter can get you at least to the fifth, really.
Yeah.
I think this whole pitching staff can really stay on script, and he was able to do that. And still for a young kid, you know, he doesn't have a lot of, you know, it's not a crazy high amount of innings pitched so far in his Auburn career. To be able to come back and really settle the game down. And like you said, I mean, once we kind of saw a little bit of what their game plan was, which was to hop on a fastball and not ever let a fastball hit the catcher's glove, we kind of shifted pretty fast there in that second inning and just kind of rode it with that slider. And he did a great job of, once again, like you said, throwing it for strikes, expanding late in counts. And to be able to hold those guys and get to the fifth like that was incredible. And honestly, like, you know, everybody's going to watch that start. That's sure. Always been his kind of thing. Like, if he can get settled, he can really, really roll. Even in inner squads, you know, when we're practicing, that's kind of his first inning. If we can get through that, he can really run. Unfortunately, we're really one pitch away from making that, just allowing one that inning, which was, you know, a talking point for all of our guys to make sure we're staying focused and locked into ending it. But, man, couldn't it be any happier for him and how he responded on Saturday.
Now that all three of your weekend starters, at least right now with Marciano, Sanders, and Petrovic, have each taken the mound twice this season, has the mindset changed at all for those guys compared to before the year? We heard about the 60 to 65% strike rates. Is there anything that's changed from that, or is it more of now that you get into a rhythm, obviously still changing things up because you mentioned it, these teams are going to go and look at all of these starts, but the overall mindset, has it changed at all, or do you feel like that's starting to get locked down?
No, I mean, you know, and this goes with any young player, is just making sure their work in between is consistent. Don't ride the highs too high because, you know, we're all human and we're going to get our butts kicked eventually. and not, you know, when that happens, we can't get too low because, you know, we're one outing off of having a really good one. So it's really just about them being consistent. And as far as the mentality and what they do changing, no, absolutely not. You know, Coach Foxall and Coach Thompson and I spend a lot of time really trying to teach and impress upon them why they are good. And obviously, if they have a bad day, we can, you know, with the amount of information that's out there, we can kind of figure out why they were bad or what we need to do to course correct. But, you know, they have confidence in what they do. And I think you're seeing it on the mound. And I think you're seeing it in the strikes because I don't think they're afraid to challenge the strike zone.
Early in this season, Coach, how important is it for bullpen guys to simply get innings and eat up innings and get experience while also at the same time wanting to slowly carve out that identity for the bullpen and get each of those arms where they need to be as the year goes on?
Yeah, you know, I would say that's one thing we're really trying to get some guys in some games and get them some experience, because we think there's even, you know, there's some real arm talent in this staff that we haven't been able to show off. And part of that is because our starters have done so well, and it's crazy just to take a guy out just because we want to build in another direction.
Right.
But I think, you know, hopefully, you know, the offense is continuing to get rolling. Our starters have done a great job. Our bullpen's been lights out with Hetzler and Brewer at the back. So I think, but we're still trying to build out and keep building the staff and the depth, because we know inevitably there will be days where we're off script and, you know, we're second and 15 or something and we're down five and you know, whoever can't get through the second inning. So that's kind of the one thing that we're talking internally as a staff, that we want to keep getting these guys that maybe haven't pitched as much more innings to help the guys who you have seen more often.
Well, all the football analogies, I got to hop in here as well. You're the pitching coach, but I know that you love offense just as much as anybody else. You're like a defensive coordinator playing with a dominant offense that can make your life a little bit less stressful. What have you seen from the guys at the plate that continue to build your confidence with the pitching guys and what this season can be as it works its way to SEC play?
Yeah, I think our offense is going to be just fine. I really do. I mean, God, honestly, if you would have walked out here during the inter-squads, you'd have been like, man, is this pitching staff going to be okay? And obviously, there's a lot of season left. But, you know, every time everybody's looking for their first hit, their first home run.
Right.
And, you know, young players start pressing, and then that can kind of snowball. And I felt like this weekend really, you know, what, like it did last year, hopefully can kick off the offensive guys just relaxing because they have so much talent. The lineup's really tough to plan against because you got lefties, you got righties, you got some pop, you got some contact, you got some guys that can run. So it's kind of a diverse lineup that can do a lot of things, and they just needed to kind of have a couple good games and let that pressure alleviate. So you know what? I tell Gabe all the time, man, we're going to win a game 13-10.
Sure, yeah.
It's going to be it's all going to be even in the end, and we're just here to try to win ball games and help each other out.
Coach Everett Tieford, the pitching coach for the Auburn Tigers, here with us on the phone lines to start hour number two on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. And you mentioned the defense relying on the offense relying on the defense. It works in baseball the same way, where it's a two-man dance. And how have you noticed the energy bounce between the mound and the position guys when you're getting those quick innings and then the offense comes back and strings together a couple of runs?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the position player front, there's nothing worse than watching a guy sit out there and throw, you know, a bunch of balls and, you know, you start getting flat-footed. So I think our guys, you know, obviously we want to be on the bench a little bit longer, but I think they're excited to get out there and play behind their guys when we are on defense. It's, you know, strikeouts have been great. I don't know if it's sustainable at maybe this rate. I hope so, and I hope I'm wrong. But when you're also, you know, fielding two, an out and a half or two outs, an inning, whatever it's been at this point, that obviously is really nice, especially with aluminum bats, because any ball in play can go over the fence. But yeah, I mean, when your starter and your pitchers are out there throwing strikes and are competing, I think that just helps the energy and helps the vibe of the whole team.
This weekend, Auburn unofficially doing the math, scored in 16 of the 27 innings that you played here this weekend in Arlington. That is a lot of stress pitches for opposing pitchers, and not sure if that is the same analogy or the same wordage that you used when I was playing college ball, but stress pitches for pitchers. And from your side, talk to the listeners about whether that is the stress pitches that you use or something else on runners on base or just pitching from the stretch, runners in scoring position, not allowing the pitchers to be the ones that command the rhythm, that dictate the tempo when you're going from the windup. How do those add up, whether that's over a weekend, whether that's just over a start or trying to get into a guy on Sunday, or it can ultimately be the swing game for the Auburn Tigers?
Yeah, I think there's multiple factors. You know, but Coach Thompson is really big on getting the leadoff guy on. And if you can get the leadoff guy on, you're more likely to score two runs than you are actually one run. I think we did the math and it was like 1.8 runs per inning when you get the leadoff guy on. So those pitches in the stretch, pitchers just aren't quite as comfortable as they are when they're in the windup. And then you have the multiplying factor of if you can get a starter out of the game early and you make them use relievers, you know, that can really drain on some depth throughout the weekend. And, you know, you end up getting in a game and on Sunday. And if you're kind of a better stock in the bullpen than the other team is, you can kind of just keep grinding them out and running the ball up the middle, and they'll get tired and you'll get to some arms that aren't at the top of their list to use. And that's when, you know, you can see those double digit run scores. But yeah, I mean, our offense did a great job of getting on base. Bristol Carter had a great weekend, and he's a pain in the butt to have on just because he's always trying to steal. He's jumping around on base, and it can be extremely distracting for guys, which, you know, that helps Chase Frelick and Bub and all those guys behind him. So I was really happy the way, you know, for them to have success this past weekend.
Auburn baseball pitching coach Everett Tiefert here with us on the phone lines to start hour number two. A tradition with Auburn baseball that, man, we are absolutely loving, and we appreciate all of y'all's time in there as well. The Tigers off to a 6-1 start with pitching, setting the tone for Auburn early, and they look to continue building momentum deeper into the season and towards SEC play. Coach, we appreciate your time and the insight. Best of luck the rest of the way.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
That is Coach Everett Tiefert, the Auburn pitching coach for Auburn baseball, joining us on the phone lines here to start hour number two on a Tuesday edition of On the Line. My goodness, it's quickly becoming, again, a fan favorite segment, one of our favorite segments. We got to do this starting last year where our weekly interviews, and so the fact that it started with Coach Thompson, worked its way into a player with Jake Marciano, and now Coach Elliott Tiefert, being able to dive into just some of the details, some of the mindsets that these Auburn Tigers go through on a day-to-day basis. Really, really cool. Make sure to go check out Auburn baseball tomorrow evening, hump day with Loretta the Camel for West Georgia coming to town. We'll take a break, come back, and continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Coach Tiefert from Auburn Baseball for sitting down with Christian earlier today, talking to him about one of the best pitching performances we've seen across college baseball so far this season. I'm seeing a lot of national outlets starting to give love to Jake Marciano and a lot of the other guys in that pitching room. So very cool to see what Auburn Baseball has been up to. And again, thanks to Coach Tiefert for joining us here on the show. But we flip to the hardwood for the rest of the show, because tonight in college basketball, a little bit of a lighter slate, Christian, but still some games that are intriguing, especially in the SEC outside of Auburn and Oklahoma, because of course we're going to talk about that coming up in the next segment for the last 30 minutes of today's show. But how about Tennessee on the road at Missouri? Vols favored by about a bucket or so. Still ranked in the top 25. Missouri's one of those pesky teams that if somebody catches them in the tournament, they're not going to be happy about it. But having to go to Como has proven not to be an easy trip either this season.
No, it hasn't. And this is going to be a 24-21 type of football game that you would expect to see. I mean, the first one to score 30 points might win this basketball game. Total is 144, but my goodness, the way that these two teams play, very similar in physicality, very similar in wanting to dominate from block to block. Nate Ament is going to have a really good game, because he's going to be going up most likely against Mark Mitchell, again, who is one of the more gifted interior scorers in the SEC, has some really nice playmaking abilities in there as well. And so, again, not necessarily one of those games that pops out to the eye initially, but definitely one that both teams want for a win, and both teams want to, again, continue to climb up in bracketology, which we'll get to here in just a little bit.
Yeah, Tennessee on a four-game winning streak, but three of those coming against some of the worst teams in the SEC, Mississippi State, LSU, and Oklahoma. But the one that highlights me, or for me, is the comeback win on the road in Nashville this weekend against Vanderbilt. That'll go down as a very solid win for a Tennessee squad that's 10-4 in SEC play. They're tied for second.
You wouldn't know it.
You wouldn't know it. You really wouldn't. Florida's up there 12-2. And then there's Alabama, Arkansas, and Tennessee going into tonight, all tied at 10-4. Also, all three of them 20-7 overall, funny enough. And I don't know, man. Of the three right there, Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Who do you trust the most? Are any of them threats to take down Florida with, what, five games to go in SEC play?
Funny you say that. I'm sitting there looking at all of the teams' remaining schedules, and Florida sits with at Texas, home for Arkansas, home for Mississippi State, and at Kentucky. And so
it's not terrible.
That is 2-2 at the very worst.
Yeah.
Which, if that's the case, means that one of those teams has to go 4-0. So you're almost having to guarantee one of those four teams, Alabama with Mississippi State, at Tennessee, at Georgia, home for Auburn. To finish it up, Arkansas has home for A&M, at Florida, home for Texas, at Missouri. It's not overly favorable if you are wanting to pick a team that might drop from that standings. And Tennessee has at Missouri, home for Alabama, at South Carolina, and then the rematch with Vanderbilt. And so if I had to say it right now, I think Florida's in a really good spot, because again, even if you go 2-2, I'd be willing to bank on one of those teams, or if not all three of those teams, losing at least one of those contests. But I guess if I had to pick one as of right now, if Alabama can beat Tennessee on the road, State, Georgia, and then back home for Auburn.
Yeah.
I feel like they're the second front runner, but you never know after the Bediako denial once again here this morning.
Darn. Oh, no. We're so sad.
We also apologize for not spending a whole lot of time using our energy to talk about that situation yet again. But no, Alabama's probably comfortably in second.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I agree. I think Florida has wrapped this thing up as long as they continue to take care of business. And so, yeah, Tennessee on the road at Missouri tonight. Kentucky's on the road at South Carolina. Right, the Cats trying to bounce back from their loss against Auburn, their third loss in a row. They have South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, and Florida to end their season. So they better try and get back on track tonight, because I don't see them going 4-0 in that stretch. I don't see them, the way they're playing right now, even going 3-1 in that stretch. I mean, they should win tonight. I think they can beat Vanderbilt inside of Rupp Arena. I think they're a better team than Texas A&M at their best. And then Florida in the regular season finale will be a lot of fun. But I just don't know what that Kentucky team is, and fascinated to see what their response is tonight against the South Carolina team that's just not good.
They're not great, but they figured out how to stop Josh Hubbard and ultimately won because of it. And you look at Kentucky right now, you mentioned the losing streak. They dropped two spots in bracketology. Kentucky, my goodness, what a scary 8 seed Mark Pope and the Cats would be in the March Madness.
Yeah, tournament. And especially, I haven't looked into detail, and I can't remember if Lance went into detail with us last Friday about the, because they've got three guys out. They're playing without three players they were banking on this year. I don't know if any of them are expected to come back in March. I don't think so, but I'll be honest, I don't know the latest updates there.
I don't believe Quaintance is.
No, yeah. Quaintance is out, I think, but the other two very well could. And so if that's the case, and again, I'm kind of speaking with ignorance here, not knowing the full injury situation there, but you're right, an 8 seed for Kentucky, if they do get somebody back, or even if they just figure it out altogether, that's a team that made the Sweet 16 last year that wasn't supposed to. I'm not counting out Mark Pope until triple zeros. So
set to play Clemson right now in the first round. Whew. What a matchup.
And the way Clemson's been playing, Kentucky would love that matchup.
They definitely would. You can't forget about Duke going on the road, only 18-point favorites against Notre Dame.
So bad. The ACC sucks.
Miami of Ohio looks to remain undefeated. Looks to move to 28-0.
Yeah, baby.
As they are on the road at Eastern Michigan, who is 10-18. Miami of Ohio right around double-digit favorites in that contest. A really interesting game. Another one that doesn't necessarily pop out to you, but Virginia and NC State.
Very
Virginia
intriguing.
Struggled against Miami. Miami had the lead for a majority of the game. Virginia fought back and kind of stiff-armed Miami. Miami made it close towards the end. Virginia was able to pull out a win, but my goodness, you go ask a majority of college basketball fans, maybe not the diehard ones, but just general college basketball fans. Yeah, I enjoy it. Yeah, I watch it. All right, tell me where Virginia is ranked right now. I guarantee not many people know that they're the 11th ranked team in the country.
Yep.
24-3, 12-2 in the ACC. Take on NC State at home, because Will Wade and Darion Williams, you really, that is another team, you do not know which with which Wolfpack team you are going to get. Virginia, only 6-point favorites in that one.
Yeah, and that's Will Wade. I mean, it's, you just can't ever count that team out at NC State, a team that is a 7 seed right now. And funny enough, guess who they're paired up to play? Auburn. In the bracketology from ESPN. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that would could be interesting. I just think the ACC is very down this year. Cincinnati heads on the road to Texas Tech without Toppin, of course, from Texas Tech. And Cincinnati coming off maybe the best win in the history of their program. the blowout win over Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse. My Dayton Flyers have St. Louis, a top 25 team, coming into UD Arena tonight. That'll be a fun one in Dayton, Ohio. Other than that, nothing overly crazy. Man, we give so much love to the Big 12, but the teams at the bottom of that conference are horrifically bad, including teams like Baylor, Utah. I mean, those teams are just, they're just bad.
Yeah, what I would give for Auburn to go on the road and be favored by 14 points in any conference game. I don't think it's a true possibility just based off of the talent that's in the Southeastern Conference. One that I will be interested, you mentioned Cincinnati and Texas Tech. Wonder how inflated that line is in favor of Cincinnati. Texas Tech only a 6-point favorite at home. Wonder if that has a little bit to do with because of that that win at Allen Fieldhouse. Will be interesting to see what they do without Toppin, but they've seemed to be just fine as they took on Kansas State and ran over them a couple nights ago.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. So some interesting games in college basketball tonight, but one that I believe most of you will be tuned into is Auburn and Oklahoma. It's a later tip, 8 o'clock in Norman. Tigers favored by about 2 or 3 points. We'll tell you what we think about it right after this. We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
Minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And now we talk Auburn and Oklahoma, a game that feels like it kind of snuck up on everybody. Even though we talked about this yesterday, and it's just one of those quick turnarounds that, honestly, Auburn hasn't had a ton of this year. It doesn't feel like an SEC play, right, where you play on Saturday and then quickly turn around and play on Tuesday. And I feel like, without doing an actual evaluation of the schedule, these quick turnarounds have seemed to be at home for the most part for Auburn this year, where they've played on Saturday and then a home game on Tuesday. That was the case last week with Vanderbilt, but you played the home game before that against Alabama. I mean, you just haven't had a whole lot of instances like this where you tough game at home and then basically wait a day, hop on a plane, and get ready to play another game. And that's what Auburn has tonight, 8 o'clock against Oklahoma in Norman. You can listen to the radio broadcast with Andy Burcham, Randall Dickey. They'll be on the call over on Wings 94.3. They will be on the air 7:30 pregame with an 8 o'clock tip in Norman, Oklahoma. And it's a game that snuck up on most Auburn fans, but we're hoping that this is not a game that has snuck up on the Auburn team. Hopefully they're not hung over from the win and things like that. And you hope that this team is able to build on what happened Saturday night inside of Neville.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the quick turnaround. It almost feels as if you're Stephen Pearl of, okay, we've knocked all of our Kentucky prep out on game day. You almost have to start studying Oklahoma because, again, you mentioned it. You wake up and it's Sunday morning. You're going on the plane on Monday, so that way you can at least get a single day of shoot-around. And one of the quickest turnarounds that, again, you mentioned it, Auburn's had all season long because of the road trip. You don't have that extra day or the extra half day of
right.
Sleeping in your own bed, getting to the arena in the morning, going through game prep, going to your gym, getting shoot around. Your time clock has completely flipped and puts Oklahoma at a little bit of an advantage. Again, they played late Saturday against A&M at home. And so rather than their quick turnaround being on the road, they get it back-to-back at home. But how nice is it to at least be able to talk about a quick turnaround following a win, right? Rather than all of a sudden it's, okay, holy cow, you're still reeling in, licking your wounds from Saturday. Now you're trying to avoid going on the verge of seven straight losses. I mean, that would be a very, very tough conversation to have. So fortunately, the mentality has switched a little bit, at least from the fan base, and you're hoping the confidence and that momentum can carry over into tonight.
And this will be a unique challenge for Auburn this evening. This Oklahoma squad, if you're unfamiliar with them, 13-14 on the season, just 3-11 in SEC play. A team that has clearly struggled this season. Non-conference play was pretty good to them. They lost to Gonzaga, they lost to Nebraska, and they lost to Arizona State. Two of those are top 15 teams in college basketball. They actually started SEC play 1-0 with a win over Ole Miss, and then it started. And it has not been pretty, but they have won two of their last four, right? They won against Vanderbilt, where they were up huge and almost let Vandy come back. And then they beat Georgia at home 94-78. So they have started to figure out some things. But I say this will be a unique challenge because Oklahoma's offense is pretty darn good. They're a top 30 offensive team in the country, according to KenPom. And so Auburn's defense has to travel, which is typically what we say in most sports, that defense usually travels. Auburn, not so much, but it's going to have to tonight because, again, they are 29th in KenPom, according to their offensive numbers. As of late, has not been great against good defensive teams. It has not been great, like Texas A&M and Tennessee. But those two teams are much better defensively than Auburn is. Against teams like Georgia, they put up 94. Against Vanderbilt, they put up 92. If you let this team get out and run and let this team get out and score, they'll beat you. They may not stop you, but they will just flat out outscore you. Their defense is not all that crazy. They're not a fast team in terms of tempo, one of the slowest in the country. But they can flat out score if you don't play disciplined defense.
Their guards average 32 apiece. Average 32.
Dang.
Yeah. No, average 30, right around 32 points. It's 31 and a half per contest between the two of them. Nigel Pack is going to be the one that you hear name the most. He's a 44% three-point shooter, shoots 46% from the floor. He's going to be the guy that you have to stop from having a career night. Or if you don't do that, you better stop Xavier Brown. Or if you don't do that, it better be Tay Davis. If you let those three guys who are their leading scorers, you have Darion Reed in there as well, who's come on a little bit more as of late. But those guys do right around 60% of the overall scoring for this Oklahoma team, and a team that doesn't necessarily turn the ball over very often, only average 10 turnovers a contest. And I think a little bit of that is because of the speed in which they play. They use that to their advantage. And so if they turn you over 12 or 15 times, that feels almost like one of those offenses in college football that just churns clock and continues to get first downs and will use 40 seconds every single time to where you look up and, oh gosh, we get the football for the very first time and there's 5 minutes left in the first quarter. You have to value possessions that much more, and you do so on the road even more than you do at home. But against a team like Oklahoma that plays very slow and does not turn the ball over and scores at a very high clip, half of the court is very, very scary when Oklahoma's on it.
And it's a toss-up for Auburn because, and it may not even be a toss-up to be quite honest with you, it might be a situation where dude, ESPN, y'all gotta stop, man. This is just ridiculous.
We get a tally back, baby.
Oh, gosh.
It's like 19-3 now.
Yeah. God, so stupid. Anyways, I was gonna say it's a toss-up for Auburn, but I don't think it is in the terms of Auburn's guards stopping Oklahoma's guards. Because what did we say going into the Mississippi State game? We don't trust Auburn's guards to stop Josh Hubbard. He went off and had literally a career night. Auburn beats Kentucky, but they didn't stop their guards. Otega Owe had 29. Do we have confidence that Auburn can stop the guards of Oklahoma tonight? Two guys that you said had averaged 31 points a game. We haven't seen it. We have not seen it. And if you let those guys shoot the basketball and score at will, Auburn will lose this game tonight.
It's one of those really weird developments that have changed in college basketball as of late. Because it used to be, okay, this guy averages 18 a night, he will not score. We are going to make sure that he does not have his average. But because of the the tempo, the athleticism, just the overall scoring ability, whatever you attribute it to, it's almost been, okay, we're going to let this guy get his because he's good enough to, especially on the offensive end of the floor, so we might not put our best defender on there. However, their second and third guys, instead of averaging 18, they average 15 and 12, very similar to this right here, of we are not going to let those guys have a crazy night with them. And that's something that you can work with. For Kentucky, yes, Owe still had an incredible night, but then you go, I believe it was Jacob Hillman that talked about it yesterday on the show about how well Auburn did against everybody else, not allowing Chandler to get going or some of those other guys that average right around double figures, holding them below their average to where everything begins to equal itself out, right? The law of averages kind of working its way out for a team's total points, but you cannot allow it to be that outlier of, okay, we're going to let Nigel Pack finish with 23. We're also going to let Xavier Brown finish with 18. And all of a sudden that's 10 extra points added onto their 82 total points per game.
There are 365 Division I college basketball teams. This is a stat that I'm about to read to you that Auburn should not worry themselves about, should not take into this game, and I'm sure they're not, but it's just funny for us to talk about, and that's what makes our job so interesting. Remember how we've talked about the ball not bouncing Auburn's way and luck not really being on Auburn's side? You think it's bad for the Tigers? Let's take a look at what Oklahoma is in luck rating, according to KenPom. 365 teams in Division I college basketball. The Sooners are ranked 358th. There are only seven teams worse than Oklahoma in terms of the luck rating on KenPom. That's pretty bad.
Funny enough, Ole Miss is right in that category as well.
Some big P5 teams. Oklahoma, Northwestern, Washington, Marquette, who's terrible.
Hofstra.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, big names.
Yeah.
Lamar.
Kansas State, Marquette. Gosh, Marquette at 9-18.
Marquette is so bad.
That hurts to even think about. But it is weird to think that...
Again, it's a stat. You can't use that.
No,
it's just fascinating to look at it.
Right. And again, the way that we talked about luck yesterday is if you're 0.03 in positives or 0.03 in negatives, you are slightly lucky or unlucky. If you get to 0.5 negative or positive, 0.05, you are considered a relatively lucky team. Oklahoma is negative 0.1. So they are double down what is considered a slightly or very unlucky team to where I don't even know the accurate description of what the most unlucky...
Snake bit. I don't know. I mean, that seems to be... Seems to be what it is. And again, Auburn doesn't need to use that. That's just something that I was noticing in prep today. But for Auburn in this game tonight, again, we talked about bracketology earlier in the show, kind of what this game means for Auburn, and we'll do so again at the end of the show and make our picks. How does Auburn win tonight? How do you do it? How do you build on what you did well against Kentucky? How do you overcome the things you didn't do well against Kentucky? And how do you try to get hot down the stretch in one of your easier stretches of the season? How do you do it? How do you go on the road? This will not be a hostile environment. This will not be a place you can't win in. This will not be a team that's more talented or better coached than you. How do you do it tonight in Norman if you're Auburn?
Want to. Something that Stephen Pearl has talked about all season long. If we want to get down in guard like we did during our 4-game win streak, we'll go on a run. If we want to have defensive lapses like we do to start games or to start second halves when Kentucky goes on a 14-3 run in the first two and last two, or I guess the last two and the first two of the first and second half, runs like that, especially for a home team, will kill you on the road. If you want to take pride in your individual man-on-man defense of, okay, this ball is not getting inside the perimeter, or is it going to be a defensive lapse? I don't think that Auburn will have a tremendous amount of struggle scoring the basketball unless things just go completely haywire and it turns into iso ball even more than what we already traditionally see. I would love to see a really good offensive night on the floor and that lead to defense. And then that way we can come back on here and almost say the opposite, that defense led to offense. But the way that college basketball teams are built, whether it's frustrating or not to say, your offense depends on your defense. And or at least more times than not, I guess with Auburn, I guess it could be a little bit different, but my goodness, just the want to in this contest, the want to make the extra pass, the want to get down and guard, the want to defend without fouling. I mean, you are more talented than this team, but how many times have we said that storyline?
And they're good enough to beat you. That's what Auburn, that's the message that Stephen Pearl and company need to send tonight. You don't show up and play, they'll beat you. And that win against Kentucky will mean nothing. That's what I would say.
You want to know why we know that? Because Auburn's favored by 1.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're not expecting this game to be one that you just go in and cakewalk your way through and, okay, we got to stretch our arms and, you know, go get whatever at the 8-minute timeout because Auburn was up by 13 and we win by 9 or we win by 10 and woohoo, it feels good. This is a quad one win technically for the Auburn Tigers.
A quad one game. That's a tournament game. That's what that means. This is a, you are taking on an opponent that according to the numbers, because you're on the road, this is a team that the NCAA tournament committee deems as worthy.
Only one other team has played more quad one games. Auburn's 5-10. A chance to go to 6-10 to get 6 quad one wins on this season.
With another opportunity at the end.
All of a sudden to start stacking those. And we talked a lot about, okay, yes, if you play 16 or 17 quad one games, sure, that gets you rewarded to some degree, but if you're 3-14 in those, that doesn't really add up to anything. You have the chance to go to 6-10, possibly get up to 7-10. That's when you start having a legitimate resume. That's when the respect is re-earned for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, 6-10, 6-11, even if you lose the Alabama game, you're doing just fine. You'll move back up on your seed lines and take care of business down the stretch. It's Auburn and Oklahoma tonight in Norman. We'll take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Come back, make our final picks, and wrap up the show right after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. We've had a lot of fun talking basketball and baseball with Auburn basketball, of course, taking on Oklahoma tonight. Had a big deep dive into baseball as well today with the sweep in Arlington this weekend. Another game coming up tomorrow against West Georgia. Also had Everett Tiefert join us, the pitching coach for Auburn baseball, in hour number two as well. So if you missed any of today's show, be sure you go and check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And again, tonight, Auburn men's basketball on the road at Oklahoma. 8 o'clock tip. You can listen to the radio broadcast with our friend Andy Burcham on the call. Pregame starts at 7:30, tip off at 8 over on Wings 94.3. Busy couple of days around our family of radio stations. Starting today, Auburn High School softball hits the airwaves for the first time. Our buddy Jack Hutton is hopefully in Ben Russell by now. He'll be setting up for a 5 o'clock start over on 96.3 W. Lee for not the season opener, but our broadcast opener for the Lady Tigers on the Diamond. So be sure you tune into that tonight at 5 o'clock, and you can flip back and forth between that and Tiger Country, right, Christian? Yeah. Lee Scott Baseball with the home opener tonight.
Yeah, the home opener for the Warriors at John Meals Field, taking on Marbury. First pitch, 4:30. So we're rushing over here as soon as we get finished up. Warriors 1-0 on the season. They took down Valley 10-5, a really good Valley team. And, man, there is a whole lot of excitement for Lee Scott Warrior Baseball. Coach Jared Cook's already done a phenomenal job in year one, looking to take a big step up in year two. Has the guys to do it. It was a very young team last year. Looking to some of the veteran leadership to take over. Man, the mound is going to be really, really exciting for Lee Scott here this season. But, yes, tonight, 4:30, taking on, I guess, here in just a little bit, 4:30, taking on Marbury over on Tiger Country, 104.5, tigercountry.net, and that Radio Alabama app.
So those two high school sports going on, and then again, basketball tonight. Baseball will be on Wings tomorrow. Tiger Talk on Thursday. More women's basketball coming up on Thursday here on ESPN, and then a flurry of things going on this weekend as well. I'll be on the air tomorrow morning. Oh, goodness. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., baby. Woo! Doing it again. 96.3 W Lee. Again, that's the home of Auburn High School basketball, baseball, softball. The Auburn High girls are in the Elite Eight tomorrow morning against those pesty Red Devils. Yet again, here we go. Trip to the championship on the line, or I guess trip to the Final Four. And it comes down to Auburn Central. Why would it not?
After winning both regular season games and...
the area championship game. Auburn's 3-0 are the girls against Central, and they were 3-0 last year against Central and lost the one that mattered, unfortunately. And that's how it goes, right? That's how high school sports goes sometimes. So I'm on the air early tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. sharp, 96.3 W Lee for Auburn High School girls basketball in the Elite Eight against the Central Red Devils. So wake up, grab a coffee and donuts, and shoot me a prayer, if you would, so I can get through that and be ready to go. It's going to be exciting. Super, super excited for that. But that'll be again tomorrow at 9 a.m. over on 96.3 W Lee. But again, tonight, Auburn men's basketball on the road at Oklahoma. Quad one opportunity for Stephen Pearl and the Tigers. Do they get it done? Do they get it done in Norman to win back-to-back games for the first time since Florida and Texas?
Whew. Weirdly, you don't feel good about this game, and not necessarily because of Auburn, but just because Oklahoma, if desperation hits, if playing with nothing to lose hits, which you saw a little bit of that against Texas A&M, but the Elijah Freeman bucket, I don't think that there's any way that you are unable to respond to that in a positive way. I would be very, very surprised if you do not see an Auburn team that has a March Madness playoff aspiration. Yes, you're in the tournament right now, but you're still kind of playing for your tournament life, and you know what a win like this would mean for your resume, for your staff, for the players, and just in general for Auburn basketball. I refuse to believe that this is not a team that comes out with their hair on fire and looks really, really good. I think it'll be a lower scoring game despite both teams being really good and efficiently on the offensive side of the basketball. But I'll take Auburn in a close one, right around maybe a bucket or two above that cover line.
Okay, we shall see. I'll take Auburn tonight as well. It's one of those games where, yes, it's quad one, but if you win, nobody in the national landscape will talk about it. But my goodness, we'll talk about it if you win. But we'll talk about it if they lose, too. Why? Because it's our job, and we love what we do. So, Auburn High softball tonight, 96.3 W Lee. Lee Scott baseball, Tiger Country 104.5. Auburn men's basketball, Wings 94.3. Can you tell that we crust the local landscape? We do it better than anybody. Download that Radio Alabama app, and you can tune into all of that and Auburn High girls basketball tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. on 96.3 W Lee. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Gowen. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.